Want to mention...
Changing my seat.
Want to talk about one... Talk about one particular point. In this week's parsha, one specific question or one specific problem that I haven't seen that any of the Mefarshim discuss this at all. And if anybody actually does find anybody who talks about it, I would be indebted. The fact that Klal Yisrael were Nigal from Mitzrayim, the fact that Klal Yisrael were let out of Mitzrayim, managed to get out of Mitzrayim, had very significant influences both on Klal Yisrael and on Mitzrayim. The Geula of Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim, the fact that Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim and went out as free men, the Avdus Lecheirus of Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim had a tremendous effect both on Klal Yisrael and on Paray and on Mitzrayim. The Egyptians used the millions of people that Klal Yisrael numbered at that time. There are different varying opinions amongst the Mefarshim, but within the spectrum of the various opinions amongst the Mefarshim, you're talking about minimum of 6 million people, if not more. They were using them as slaves without any necessity to remunerate them in any way at all. They didn't have to pay them anything at all. And all of a sudden, these millions of free labor suddenly disappear. They go off the map, which obviously made a tremendous impact and a tremendous upheaval in the economic situation of Mitzrayim. You can imagine what sort of upheaval a workforce of millions of people, which is free, creates when all of a sudden you have to replace that workforce with people that you have to pay them to do the same job. And because the fact that Klal Yisrael are leaving Mitzrayim is so significant, both to Am Yisrael and to Paray and the Egyptians, significant that we said to Paray and Mitzrayim because of the upheaval that's going to come about on a economic, political level to Mitzrayim, and the change that's going to take place in Klal Yisrael through leaving Mitzrayim and developing into a nation with its own system, with Torah, and developing into a nation with its own country, etc., etc., etc. Therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam felt, for whatever reason it may be, that it was important to inform both the Egyptians and Klal Yisrael prior to this event happening that this event is going to happen. The Ribbono Shel Olam felt it was important that they should know about it. Before the Geula actually takes place, Klal Yisrael have to know that the Geula is about to take place, and Paray and Mitzrayim also have to know that the Geula is going to take place. Therefore, more or less at the onset of this week's parsha, the Ribbono Shel Olam tells Moshe Rabbeinu that I'm giving you your first mission. what's your first mission? Leich v'asavto ezikne Yisrael, get together the Zikne Yisrael, v'amalta aleim Hashem aleike avisechem nira Eli aleike Avram Yitzchok v'Yankiv, leimer pokoit pokadati eschem v'sa'asu lechem b'Mitzrayim. Pokoit pokadati eschem. That the Ribbono Shel Olam has appeared to me, and the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I should tell you that he knows what's going on, he knows what the Egyptians are doing to you, and he's going to deal with it. How is he going to deal with it? V'oimar. I've already said, Ale eschem me'oni Mitzrayim el eretz haknaini achiti emeiri aprizi achibi ve'evusi el eretz zovos cholavudvash. I'm going to take you out of Mitzrayim, and I'm going to take you to an Eretz Zovas Cholav Udvosh, to a land flowing with milk and honey. That's Pasuk Yud Zayin. The next Pasuk. Ubosa ato v'zikne Yisrael el melech Mitzrayim. The second part of your mission is, now having told the Zikne Yisrael that Klal Yisrael are going to be redeemed from Egypt, now your job is to inform the Egyptians, because they have to know about this as well. V'yamalta ilov, so go to Paro, who represents the Egyptian nation, and say to him, Hashem alekeho ivrim nikro oleinu, v'yato nelcho noderech shleishes yomim bamidbo v'nizbuch al Hashem alekeinu. And tell him that you're leaving for a number of days in order to go out and to offer up sacrifices to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The purpose, the objective of the Geula was twofold. On the one hand, one objective of the Geula was a Dovah Gashmi. It was a purely material thing. Namely, free Am Yisrael from this tremendous burden that they had of being physical slaves to the Egyptians. Put an end to this life of Avdus, this life of Shiflus, and everything that was involved in it, and bring them to their own country where they'll be able to enjoy a free, democratic system of living. Well, they'll be able to live benachas, they'll be able to live b'shal, they'll be able to live in peace, they'll be able to live in tranquility. That was one point of the Geula. Secondly, there was another point in the Geula. And the second point of the Geula was, which was that Klal Yisrael should leave Mitzrayim in order that Klal Yisrael should be able to receive Torah and Mitzvahs, in order that they should be able to lead a life of Torah and Mitzvahs. And by leading a life of Torah and Mitzvahs, Klal Yisrael are going to fulfill the divine design, which was that Klal Yisrael should be an Am Segula and an Am Kodesh. And this aspect of Geula, the spiritual aspect of Geula, was so important. It was such an integral part of the Geula that immediately, when the Ribbono Shel Olam speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu prior to telling him the twofold mission of going to Am Yisrael and going to Paroi, already in Pasuk Yud Beis, the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Baitziach Esom Mitzrayim, when I take you out of Egypt, Tavdun Es Ha'elikim Al Harazeh." The whole point, the whole purpose of it is that you should get to Har Sinai in order to be Mekabel Torah. So the Ribbono Shel Olam has given two reasons why Klal Yisrael have to grieve Mitzrayim. One is to get rid of the Shibud Gashmi, and the other is to, for a function, for a purpose, which is a Sibur Ruchni. And the Ribbono Shel Olam, in his infinite wisdom, for some reason or other, decided that both Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim should know about this before it happens. Those are the facts. Now, logic dictates that if there are two reasons as to why Klal Yisrael have to leave Egypt, and if the Ribbono Shel Olam in his infinite wisdom has decided and determined that both the Egyptians and Klal Yisrael have to know about this beforehand, then logic dictates that when Klal Yisrael are told about it, they should be told both reasons, and when Paro is told about it, that he should be told two reasons. And if the Ribbono Shel Olam has decided, for whatever reason it may be in his infinite wisdom, that he will only tell one of the two reasons to Paro, and he will only tell one of the two reasons to Klal Yisrael, then logic dictates what should be the reason that he should tell Paro, and what should be the reason that he should tell Klal Yisrael. Logic dictates that the reason that he should tell Paro as to why Klal Yisrael are leaving is because you are an undemocratic society, right? And we are going to pass a law of abolition of slavery. And we're going to do it a couple of thousand years before civilized Americans did it. That makes sense to Paro. You are running a dictatorial country which is totally unfair. There is no legitimacy to the concept of slavery in the way in which you are using the concept of slavery. And therefore I'm going to take these people out and make them into free people. And when the Ribbono Shel Olam is talking to Klal Yisrael, there the Ribbono Shel Olam can talk like a mashgiach. There the Ribbono Shel Olam can start talking about spirituality. The reason why I'm taking you out of Mitzrayim is not simply to put you into a democratic situation. The reason why I'm taking you out of Mitzrayim is lava, la Hashem, la Likim, la Harazer, because there's Torah, because there's mitzvahs, because you have a function in the world, because you're going to become an Am Zgula, you're going to become an Am Kodesh, Nam Leches Kerim, the Gai Kodesh, etc., etc., etc. That's what logic would dictate. But if you look in the psukim in the Torah, you find something which is fascinating. You find that what the Ribbono Shel Olam instructed Moshe Rabbeinu was to do the exact opposite. Mamish, the exact opposite. What did the Ribbono Shel Olam tell Moshe Rabbeinu? The Ribbono Shel Olam told Moshe Rabbeinu the following: when you're talking to Klal Yisrael, tell them that the reason why I'm taking you out of Egypt is to take you to an Eretz Zovas Cholav Udvosh. Because I'm going to bring you to a country which is going to be, on a material level, utopia, compared to what you have now. It's going to be a land flowing with milk and honey, with all of that portends. And when talking to Paro, the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Moshe Rabbeinu, go tell Paro that the reason why he has to free all of you is because you have to go out and serve your God. 3 days in the Midbar, offering up korbanos. It's the wrong way around. I haven't seen anybody who's ma'ir on this. But l'churit, it doesn't make sense. There's a second point which doesn't make sense in this week's parsha, but that already Chazal note. That already Chazal have a problem with. And that is that, again, we find in this week's parasha that Moshe Rabbeinu goes to Klal Yisrael and he tells Klal Yisrael the message that God told him to tell them. Namely, Vayelech Moshe v'Aaron, Moshe and Aaron go, Vayasfu es kol ziknei b'nei Yisrael. They get together all the ziknei b'nei Yisrael the way God told them to do. Vayedah b'Aaron es kol advorim Ashadiba Hashem el Moshe, and Aaron tells over to Klal Yisrael exactly what God told him to tell over to Klal Yisrael, namely, you are going to go to a land which is in Eretz Zovos, Cholav Udvosh, you're going to be freed, the slavery is going to stop. And what is the reaction of Klal Yisrael? The reaction of Klal Yisrael is, says the Pasuk immediately, everybody's very happy, everybody's very cheerful, everybody's enjoying the good news. Vaya'amenho. They all believed it. Vayishmu ki pokad Hashem es b'nei Yisrael. They heard from Moshe Rabbeinu that God had remembered them and was going to solve the problem. V'chira es onyom, and the Ribbono Shel Olam is seeing the difficulties that they're in. V'yigdu v'yishtachavu, which are l'shoynes, say Chazal, of haidah, of thanks to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and of happiness and of joy. And then the process starts. And then, again, later on, at a later point in time, which is already in Parshas Vayera, in next week's Parsha, what do we find? We find in next week's Parsha that again Moshe Rabbeinu gives a very long drasha this time to Klal Yisrael about the Geula. And again it's at the instruction of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The beginning of Parshas Vayera, Vayedaber Elokim El Moshe, the Ribbono Shel Olam again speaks to Moshe. And what does he say to him? He says, "Gamani shamati es nakas b'nei Yisrael Hashem Yitzrayim me'avidim oisom." I see the suffering that Klal Yisrael is going through. V'esker es brisi, and I remember the promise that I gave. Lochein, therefore, emoyel ivnei Yisrael. I want you to go and give over a message to Klal Yisrael. What's the message you have to give over to Klal Yisrael? Ani Hashem v'itzeis yeschem itachas ivlis Mitzrayim. I'm going to take you out of the suffering of Mitzrayim. I'm going to save you from the slavery of the Galti, and I'm going to redeem you. And you're going to be an Am and I'm going to be your God. And I'm going to bring you to Eretz Yisrael like I promised you to Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash. Same drasha. Just expanded, more in detail, the Arba Lashonos of Geula, which are represented by the Arba Kesos on the Seder night. And what is the response of Klal Yisrael? Vayidaber Moshe Keinu B'nei Yisrael. Moshe says all this over to Klal Yisrael. V'lo shamuel Moshe. They don't want to listen, they don't want to hear. Why? Mikotzer ruach u'me'aveda kasha. They can't. Mikotzer ruach, and Rashi explains mikotzer ruach means bring short breath. They're too busy in their slavery, they're too busy working. They're exhausted from this hard work, from the fact that they are ruthlessly being worked by the Egyptians. They have no patience to listen, to talk about liberation. They can't, me'aveda kasha, from the hard work. They can't listen. Say Chazal. Other than making the shibud slightly harder by not supplying bricks, and they have to find their own material to supply bricks, to create bricks. Other than that, there was no difference whatsoever in the servitude, in the slavery that they were experiencing the first time that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to them, and the slavery that they're experiencing at this point in time. And yet the first time when Moshe Rabbeinu comes to them and Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, you are going to be freed, what's their reaction? Joy, happiness. They believe it. And the second time Moshe Rabbeinu says it to them, in a short period of time relatively, they don't want to listen to him. They've got no patience even to hear what he's saying. Say, Chazal, why? What happened here? What changed? And Chazal come along and give an answer, but the answer is even stranger than the question. Chazal say, when the pasuk says "V'leishamu es Moshe mikaitzer ruach me'aveda kasha," say Chazal in two places: it's a mechilta and it's a medrash. V'chi yesh lecha adam shemizbase psura toiva v'einas amech. Have you ever heard of somebody who gets the happiest news he could possibly get? You just won the lotto. You just won $50 million. V'eina someach, and he's not happy. What does it mean? V'lo shomu lo mikotzer ruach. Say Chazal ela shehakosha be'eineihem. It was very difficult for them. Lifroish me'avodah zarah. They couldn't get away from avodah zarah. That's why they didn't want to listen to him. Rav Sinigra, that makes sense, Chazal. Bechura. They were involved in Avodah Zarah, so they weren't involved in Avodah Zarah beforehand, the first time around, a few months previously, or however long it was previously. They were also involved in Avodah Zarah then. If they were involved now, they're involved when they didn't suddenly become Avodah Zarah in the middle. And Bechalal, what's Avodah Zarah going to do with it? The pasuk says, Mi Kaitzer Ruach, Mi Avodah Kosher, where does Avodah Zarah come in here? So I was thinking the following. Chazal, on a number of occasions, describe the fact that the spiritual level of Chal Yisrael in Mitzrayim was basically at rock bottom. Yeah. Chazal, in fact, phrase it very sharply. Right? That had they not, that they descended to the to the penultimate depth of Tumah, had they not been freed at the point in time when they were freed, they would have reached the ultimate depth of Tumah, in which case they would never be able to get out of it. Which is a very, very sharp statement on the part of Chazal. In other words, Chazal are not very positive about the spiritual level of Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim. Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim didn't understand. There was no way in which they could understand what they were missing by the fact that they didn't have Torah and mitzvahs. They hadn't experienced Kabbalah Satorah yet, so they didn't know what they were missing by not having Torah and mitzvahs. As far as they were concerned, they were eternally in a matzav of enslavery that they had to do forced labor for a foreign ruling power. All that they could understand at that point in time was the physical abuse, the mental abuse, and the emotional abuse that they were going through in Mitzrayim as slaves. That was the extent of their understanding of their situation. They didn't understand that being freed from that, without accepting upon themselves a shibud of Torah and mitzvahs, is basically meaningless. That they couldn't grasp and they couldn't understand it. It wasn't within the parameters of what they were thinking about. Therefore, when the Ribbono Shel Olam commands Moshe Rabbeinu to inform Klal Yisrael of their imminent Geula, he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, don't get into the spiritual they understand nothing about. They're not at the level that they can understand what you're talking about. Go tell them one thing. I'm taking you out of Mitzrayim and I'm taking you to an Eretz Zovas Chalav Udvash. You're suffering. Physical, emotional, psychological, mental abuse. I'll take you to your place, which is a utopian society. An Eretz Zovas Chalav Udvash. All your problems will be solved. Don't get involved with the spiritual. It won't click with them at this point in time. They don't understand what you're talking about. On the other hand, says the Ribbono Shel Olam to Moshe Rabbeinu, when you go to Paro, don't start talking to Paro about physical abuse, mental abuse, psychological abuse, emotional abuse. Don't talk about these things to him. Don't start talking to him about the philosophical negativity of the concept of slavery and the importance of emancipation. Because he'll come up with 55,000 ways of solving that problem without having to free Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim. He'll say, okay, let them stay in Mitzrayim, we'll pay them for what they're doing, we'll lessen the working hours, we'll make a government commission, we'll make a Senate committee, and they'll decide to make another Senate committee, and they'll make another Senate committee, and then we'll have a public hearing, then we'll have a private hearing, and then we'll have both a public hearing and a private hearing together. We'll solve it. Don't talk to them about that. Tell him there's a God in the world, and the God said they have to leave because they have to serve him. On that, he won't be able to answer you. And Klal Yisrael had no idea what Moshe Rabbeinu said to Paro. No idea whatsoever. They only knew what Moshe Rabbeinu told them, that you are going to leave Egypt. Why? Because we're going to free you from slavery, from physical slavery, and we're going to take you to a better place. To an Eretz Zavas Chol HaVudvash. And in fact, what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu goes to Paro and he tells Paro this. And he says to Paro, you have to let Am Yisrael go. Why? Because they're going to go out in the desert and they've got to offer up sacrifices to their God. And immediately Paro's got a response. Paro's immediately got a response. What's Paro's response? You want them to serve their God and offer up sacrifices? No problem. They can do it. But here, in Mitzrayim, there's no reason that they should leave. To which Moshe Rabbeinu slogs him up completely. And Paro's left without an answer. And he says, what are you talking about? We can't do something which is a te'eva in the eyes of the Mitzrayim to offer up lambs to the Ribbono Shel Olam, when lambs are your God, and then you guys are going to kill us for doing that. So there's no way we can do it here. We have to do it somewhere where nobody sees. And on that, there's taka no answer. Paro doesn't answer him back on that. Why? Because that's a tshuva menatzachas. He hasn't got anything to answer. When Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, Le'nochin la'asis ken ki te'evis Mitzrayim nizbach la'ashem aleikenu, right? But, hey, how can we do te'evis Mitzrayim le'eneyem b'le'is galenu? They're not going to kill us. But Am Yisrael never heard any of these conversations with Paro. They never heard this at all. It never dawned on them. It never entered their mind that Moshe Rabbeinu had told Paro different reasons as to why Klal Yisrael should go free than the reasons that Moshe Rabbeinu had told them. They thought that the Ribbono Shel Olam was saying the same thing to Paro as he was saying to them. They thought that Moshe Rabbeinu had told Paro, let Klal Yisrael go because of the Shibud. Because of the physical shibud that they are suffering from you. Now what happens? When Moshe Rabbeinu says this to Paro, free Am Yisrael for a few days, let them go out in the Midbar, let them be Zeveach, and Paro says to Moshe, let them do it here in Mitzrayim, and Moshe proves to him that they can't do it in Mitzrayim. What's his reaction? Mi Hashem Hashem Eshma B'Kaylei. I don't know who this God is. I never heard of him. He doesn't appear on my list. Right? He's not in my directory of gods. Therefore, I'm not interested in what you have to say. That's the only answer he gives. Why? Because that's the only time he got. The time he got from Moshe was they have to go to serve their God. I don't recognize that God and finished. Therefore, it's a non-starter, says Paro. And then he turns around to Klal Yisrael and he says to Klal Yisrael, you know what? Chutzpah. You guys want a holiday? 3 days in the desert? No way. No 3 days. You're on the country. I'm going to make it even harder for you now. You're going to have to find and make your own bricks. You're going to have to find the material to produce your own bricks. Klal Yisrael, who don't know what the conversation was between Moshe and Paro, go running off to Paro. And they beg from Paro. What do they beg from Paro? That these new laws that he's created, he should rescind them. And they can't understand what he's talking about. Because he turns around to them, and what does he say to them? Nilpim atem, nilpim. You're a lazy bunch. That's all you are. Al kein atem oimrim nelcha nizbach al Hashem. And that's why you want to go into the desert and offer up sacrifices to your God. They think the guy's gone off his mind. Go off to the desert, offer sacrifices up to God. Who's ever heard of that? Because nobody had told them that. They had no idea. They thought that Moshe Rabbeinu had gone to Paro and told Paro the same thing that he told them. They didn't know that he told Paro something else. Therefore, what happens next? They walk out of Paro, Vayifgu es Moshe ves Aaron, it's suddenly cross, and they bump into Moshe and Aaron. And they immediately start screaming at Moshe Aaron. What do they start screaming at Moshe Aaron? Yireh Hashem aleichem v'yishpoit Hashem yivashtem esreichenu b'einei pari b'einei avodov lo seis cherev b'yod v'nageinu. What did you say to Paro? They say to Moshe Rabbeinu. We thought you were going to Paro to tell him that you should make life easier for us. You go and talk to Paro about going out offering sacrifices to Ribbono Shel Olam in the desert, and what happens? What's the result? Everything's infinitely worse than it was beforehand. And Moshe Rabbeinu hears that, and he sees that the matter has become worse for Klal Yisrael. And he can't hold himself back. And he turns around to the Ribbono Shel Olam with a taina. And he says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Lomo Eres Olam Hazeh. Why are you doing this, Ribbono Shel Olam? And then he carries on and he says, Me'oz Bosk Le Paro, since I came to Paro and told him the strange thing that you told me to tell him of going out into the desert and offering up sacrifices for 3 days. What happened? Hirale Olam Hazeh. Things have got worse for Klal Yisrael. Chazal make a lot of sense. What Chazal say in the Medrash and what Chazal say in the Mechilta. Klal Yisrael were on such a low madrega in terms of Ruchnias that they believed that if only they'll be given physical freedom without having to be meshabed themselves to Torah and mitzvahs, they can be happy and they can have a good life. Therefore, kol zman that Moshe Rabbeinu never said anything to them, when they get to Ruchnias, in connection with the Gula, that only spoke about physical freedom from Mitzrayim, they were very happy. They were sameach. But afterwards, when they found out what the conversation was between Moshe and Paroi, and when Moshe Rabbeinu tells them the details of the Gula, and Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, "V'lakachti eschem li la'om, v'yisi lachem lalikim," that I'm taking you out in order that you should be an Am Segula and an Am Kodesh and I should be your Ribbono Shel Olam. When they suddenly realize that part and parcel of the Gula is accepting upon themselves the oil of Torah and Mitzvahs, that they didn't want to hear from Moshe Rabbeinu. That part of the Gula they weren't interested. And Chazal asked, why weren't they interested? It's Gula. Answer Chazal, because there was something blocking them from being interested in the Ruchni part of the Gula. What was it? Koitzer Ruach. And Chazal say, Koitzer Ruach is Avodah Zarah. Now, I've heard of many, many types of Avodah Zarah, but I've never heard of a Koitzer Ruach Avodah Zarah. Since when is short breath an Avodah Zarah? Short breath is a medical situation brought on by tension, panic, or an asthmatic medical situation that person finds himself in. What's it to do with Avodah Zarah? In other words, the Torah is being magdir. Kotzer Ruach is Avodah Zarah. What's the Avodah Zarah here, and what does Kotzer Ruach mean? So I would venture to suggest the following. And I'm basing myself on only one source that I could find up to this point in time, and that's Mashmoyes and Ibn Ezra. There are two perspectives on the concept of slavery. There are two aspects of slavery. There's what, for want of a better way of describing it, one could perhaps call the legal aspect of slavery. What's the legal aspect of slavery? It's a political condition. It's a condition which reduces the human being to becoming basically an object, some form of private property. It's an object which belongs to an owner, or in the phraseology of the Torah, it's kinyan kasboi. What does that mean? The body of the slave, the guf of the eved, the skills, the ma'aseh yadayim, the skills that the eved had, they all belong to the eved's master by virtue of a legal system which degrades his status and turns him from a human being into a thing. He's a thing which is subject to the whims and to the retainers of his master. He's an object that is open to physical coercion, he's open to exploitation, and he's open to humiliation. But that's a legal definition of what a slave is. But there's a second aspect of slavery as well. Slavery is a state of mind. There is a certain slave mentality. There is a certain mentality that a slave has. It's not a physically imposed slavery. It's a product, maybe, of a physically imposed slavery, but it's a mental state. There are people who act in... Not only act, there are people who think. There are people who feel, and there are people who act in what's basically a very docile manner, which suggests that something snapped inside them. Their will's been broken. Their ego has somehow been erased. The whole freedom of action is warped, it's constricted. It's an emotional condition. When a slave has no initiative, there's no point in having initiative. The whole point of having initiative is if one wants to aspire to something, one wants to achieve something. A slave doesn't want to achieve anything. He wants to get through the day. That's all. He does what he's told to do by his master, and that's it. And there's part and parcel of a slave mentality is there's a total crushing of initiative on the part of the person. Slaves are numbers. That's why slaves were given numbers or given identifying factors. Because what slavery does is it removes any type of individuality whatsoever. And slavery also does another thing. It totally distorts the possibility of any type of judgment on the part of the person. You can be politically emancipated. You can be legally a free man, but you can still have a slave mentality. One's not dependent upon the other. It so happens that this state of mind, the mental slavery, is usually a product of physical slavery, but you can get it without it being a product of mythical slavery as well. Interesting. La halacha. A slave is posel la'edus. Have you ever stopped to think for a moment, why is a slave posel la'edus? What's the logic behind it? What's the rationale behind the fact that a slave is posel la'edus? There could be, there's a very simple rationale. A slave is a person without any options in life. He has no options because he's told what to do. He can't make his own decisions. Even if the master does let him make his own decisions, it's only going to be as to whether he's going to eat watermelon or he's going to eat corn on the cob. And only in an insignificant area. He's not going to allow him to make any decisions in a significant area whatsoever. Therefore, his discernment, his understanding, his analysis of anything which is substantive is completely, completely damaged. It's completely impaired. He also has no faith in his own judgment. Why does he have no faith in his own judgment? Because he never had the ability to develop any faith in his own judgment. He never developed the ability to have self-confidence in his own judgment. Why not? Because in order to develop faith into your own judgment, faith in yourself, it has to be continuously tested. It has to be sharpened by lemaisa, discernment, understanding, decision making. It's all an outcome of how much self-confidence you have in your judgments and in your discernments and in your decisions. But in order to have self-confidence in your judgment and in your discernments and in your decisions, you have to experience decisions and judgments. There has to have been a pragmatic, practical situation where you used discernment and judgment, because that sharpens, that hones the whole concept of judgment and decision-making. It's trial and error, which basically, at the end of the day, it builds the confidence of a person and it refines the perception of a person. But if there is no trial and error, because there's no opportunity being given for trial and error, then there's no way in which you can build confidence. There's no way in which you can refine your perception at all. Eidus, testimony, needs perception. Slaves don't see reality. Somebody who lives in a slave mentality doesn't see reality because he hasn't had the opportunity to develop a sense of seeing reality. A slave sees what he wants to see, not what he sees. He doesn't observe things the way they are, he observes things the way he wants them to be. Because he's never able to intervene, because he's never able to take any initiative on anything. Therefore, he sees things passively. If you see things passively and you don't see things actively, you see things the way you want them to be, not the way that they are. Giving over Eidus is an act of discernment. You have to have an awareness of the nuances. You have to have an awareness of a keenness of perception. You have to have a certain breadth of judgment. A slave hasn't got it. He lacks all these qualifications. Where do I get this from? I think we say it mefurish every single year on the Seder night. Every single year on the Seder night, we say a bracha of Haidah. What's the bracha of Haidah that we say on the Seder night? We get up and we make a bracha, and we say, V'nayid l'chashir chodosh. The bracha of Asher Galonu. We're going to sing to you a new song of praise. About what? About two things. Al gul aseinu. On the fact that we were freed from Mitzrayim, legally. We're not a cheftz of an Eved anymore, we're a cheftz of a Ben Chayrin. V'al pedus nafshenu. What's pedus nafshenu? On the redemption of our souls, what does that mean? On the fact that you took us out of a certain mental state. You took us out of the slave mentality, which can sometimes be worse than the actual physical slavery. What's the difference between a leader and between a follower? The ability to make choices. The defining factor of leadership is the ability to make decisions. Discernment, understanding, and decision-making. The leader makes decisions. The follower follows somebody else's decisions. Therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu turns around to the Ribbono Shel Olam and he says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, we need a successor. We need somebody after me who's going to be able to lead Klal Yisrael. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam say to him? I've got the guy for you. Who? Yeshua. And how does the Ribbono Shel Olam define Yeshua? Ish asher ruach boy. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, Ish asher ruach boy. He has chokhmah and he has das. Not only does he have chokhmah, which is the raw intellectual capacity to understand, he has das as well. He knows how to apply it. He knows how to make the decision based on the chokhmah. He knows how to make choices. And that is the sign of leadership. Klal Yisrael didn't want to be mekabel Torah mitzvahs. When Moshe Rabbeinu finally informs them, when they find out of the conversation that went on between Paray and between Moshe, and they found out from Moshe when the Baruch Hashem tells them the Prati HaGaula, that the point of Gaula is Torah mitzvahs. They didn't want to hear about it. Why? Because Torah and mitzvahs require something. Torah and mitzvahs, notwithstanding the fact that they're Avodas Hashem, etc., etc., etc. But Torah and mitzvahs is built on a system of Schar V'Einish. And a system of Schar V'Einish is built on one premise. Bechira. Choice. You make the decision. You want to do what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants, you don't want to do what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. That Klal Yisrael didn't want. Why? Mikotzer Ruach. They were missing. They were missing that midah of Ruach. That midah of, I can make decisions. We live in a slave mentality. That's the way that we live. Because we are Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Because we are controlled by outside forces. We are controlled by environment, we are controlled by society, we are controlled by family, we are controlled by education, we are controlled by all sorts of things. Who are constantly telling us what to do. Why did you do this? Peer pressure. What's peer pressure? What does that mean? That means I'm a follower. I did it because everybody else is doing it. That's avdus. Do you know, it's a very interesting thing. I've been thinking a lot about this the last 48 hours. You come to a guy at a kiddush, and you say to him, here's a plate of kugel. You're being about midas, right? See the guy sitting there, nobody offered him a plate of kugel. You bring him here, a plate of kugel, there's a plate of kugel, there's lakshan kugel. Here, I brought you. I brought you the shmeltang, I brought you the kichlich, I brought you the ker, I brought all to your table. And the guy says, I can't. Why not? My doctor doesn't allow it. What are you talking about? Your doctor doesn't allow it. So your doctor doesn't allow it. So what? So your doctor doesn't allow it. So don't let him eat it. I'm not giving it to your doctor, I'm giving it to you. What do you mean when you say my doctor doesn't allow it? Chat is the following. Monoshach, are you an idiot? Are you a retard? I'm talking about myself, I do it as well. You know, I'd love to, but my doctor says no. What do you mean? If you think it's going to kill you, then lechura, you don't want it. If you don't think it's going to kill you, then eat the thing. Who cares what the doctor said? It's not on my level, I'm worried. What's enough given to what the doctor said? What's the teretz? The teretz is nobody wants to be a decision maker. I don't make decisions, the doctor. I'm a doctor. I would! But my psychologist said no. You would. You would. You don't want to. You don't. Nobody's asking your psychologist to do it. They're asking you to do it. The test is you're a slave. You have a slave mentality. I don't make decisions. Make decisions for me. Your doctor makes decisions for you. Your psychologist makes decisions for you. Your typhus amomen makes your decisions for you. I really don't want to do it. But if I don't do it, it's going to cost me $400. You're a slave to $400. That's what you are. Okay, Martin Luther, off you go. You're a slave. That's Kaiser Ruch. I can't make a decision. I can't make a decision. Let the bank make a decision for me. And because when a person walks around, without the ability to make decisions, he is a slave. And because when a person is a slave, there's no bechira for a slave. says Rabbeinu Shlom Kitzel Ruach, that's Avodah Zarah. There was a time when Avodah Zarah was what the Indians and the Japanese are still doing. It's a piece of wood. Now it's become something else. Now it's become slavery, what I call conceptual slavery. Not to something physical, it's to concepts. It's to ideas. Oh, but the ick is, I shouldn't have to make decisions. I never have to make decisions. I'm free from making decisions. Because I'm a little Schwarzer who's a slave and does what I'm told to do.